please consider supporting the Wednesday blog by going to patreon.com/sthosdkane. Thanks. Welcome back to the Wednesday blog with me, Sean Kane. It's Wednesday, 24 May, 2023. Today, a continuation of the season finale, Ghosts in the Wind, Part 2. We join our hero, Dr. Olivia Stevens, on the surface of Mars. Act 3. "Hi, Mom, Dad, Seb, I'm on Mars," Olivia said to the camera in her new office in the science lab of Elysium Base. She had set herself up with a base computer as soon as she cleared the initial arrival medical scans and began recording a message home. By now, the half-an-hour communication lag had passed, and surely her parents, as well as everyone else on Earth, would have had the chance to see the images of their landing, and to hear their own celebratory cry over the comms. Olivia blushed thinking about it. Neil Armstrong had his, "It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind," when he first set foot on the moon almost 90 years ago, and now Dr. Olivia Stevens, Canada's leading astrobiologist, greets Mars with a chipper, "I made it!" Olivia looked at the monitor and imagined her parents receiving the message, their faces glowing with joy. "Mars is quite a different place," she continued, turning to look out the window of the science lab. The vista was filled with a clear sky and a red soil, as far as the eye could see. In the distance, Elysium Mons rose majestically over the plains surrounding it. "You should see the big mountain here," Olivia said to the monitor. "Elysium Mons is bigger than anything we've got on Earth by a long shot. There are some things about being here that you just can't believe until you've arrived, and seeing a 12,600-meter-tall volcano is one of them. Imagine it on Earth. It would dwarf Mount Everest, and yet it's just outside my office." The monitor chimed at her, her personal calendar reminding her of an appointment she had with the base commander. "I need to go," she said, looking hurriedly at the screen. "I love you all so much, and I can't wait to see you here on the screen soon. Bye!" She ended the recording, sent it out, beginning its half-hour journey through space back to Earth, where it would be picked up and forwarded on to her parents in Toronto. She looked at the digital clock on her desk. It was just after noon there on Elysium Base, and just after 13:30 back in Toronto. She hoped she wouldn't confuse her own local EPT for Elysium Planitia time with her native EST for Eastern Standard Time, for however long she ended up staying up there on Mars. She was due in the command center for an arrival briefing, scheduled to start then at exactly noon local time, meaning she was late for her first assignment on Mars. "Great," she thought, moving away from her desk and rushing toward the lab door. Elysium Base was one of a newer generation of Martian bases that had such refinements as automatic sliding doors, like the ones all of its residents had known from science fiction. So it was a tad disconcerting for Olivia at first, getting used to not having to open the door she was passing through. Yet so far, she hadn't run into a less cooperative one. The corridor beyond the lab was angled slightly, connecting the disparate labs, offices, mess halls, and quarters throughout the modular base. Each piece of Elysium Base had been brought separately from Earth, and while most of it was 3D printed there on site, several pieces retained at older building styles that saw their components brought piece by piece from Earth and reassembled here on Mars. She figured the command wouldn't be too difficult to find. After all, it was in the center of Elysium, an octagonal structure that had been the first to appear on the Martian surface 20 years before. Still, she knew she had to walk a ways around the exterior ring corridor before she'd reach a tube that would take her in towards command. Each module she passed had its own particular function. Beyond her own astrobiology lab were laboratories devoted to geology, climatology, chemistry, and stellar cartography. The science section was then on the outside of Elysium, along the northeastern quadrant of the base, with imposing vistas of Elysium Mons outside their windows. The location of Elysium Base was chosen in the late 2020s and early 2030s because it had been the landing site of the earlier InSight rover that arrived on Mars on 26 November 2018, and thus NASA knew what to expect of the local geography and environment. Walking along the interior tube made of metal with glass windows, she could see the other portions of the base proceeded closer and closer together until they all converged on the panopticon that was the command console. At her arrival there were 40 people living and working at Elysium Base, each from a four-person crew that had launched from Earth at some point in the last 5 years. With the arrival of Olivia's Opportunity 3, the European crew of METIS 5 would be returning home. Olivia had read through the schedule of her first day on the planet. This briefing would serve as the base commander's welcome to Jim, Annalie, Joe, and her, and that evening's dinner would mark the farewell of the METIS 5 crew, commanded by Isabella de Oreña, the Spanish astronaut who made history by being one of the first to take a crew in a Mars buggy around Elysium Mons and into Utopia Planitia, looking for a way to easily mine into the surface to reach that region's underground ice. Reaching the command module's doors, she stopped herself from striding through as she had every other doorway, this being the command module after all. Instead, she pressed the button next to the door that sounded a chime. "Somebody's ringing the bell," she could hear an incredulous voice say from behind the door. It opened, and an officer from the command staff stood there with an eyebrow raised at the situation. "Can I help you?" I'm Dr. Stevens, here for the command briefing," Olivia said somewhat sheepishly, realizing she didn't need to ask permission to enter. "You're the new scientist from Opportunity 3, right?" "Yes." "This way." The officer turned and began walking back into the center operations ring, a series of stations surrounding a central table that had a digital map of Mars on it. Olivia caught the snickering glances of the command crew surrounding her at their stations, all bemused at the idea that she thought she needed to ask permission to enter, something no one with scheduled permission ever did. "Your crew is meeting with Commander Durante in his office," the officer gestured toward the glass-walled room on the far side of the command console, slightly elevated from the rest of the module. "You might want to chime here, though," she laughed, watching as Olivia cautiously approached the commander's office, where she could see Jim, Annalie, and Joe sitting with a gray-haired man behind a desk. The commander looked up, caught Olivia's eye, and gestured for her to enter.
"You must be Dr. Olivia Stevens," he burst with joy,
standing to greet her as she entered through the sliding doors.
"Welcome to Elysium Base. Please, take a seat. We were just getting to know each other a little better."
"Olivia," Jim said, looking towards the new arrival as she took her seat next to Joe. "Let me introduce Nick Durante of NASA, the current commander of Elysium Base."
"It's a pleasure to meet you," Olivia said, nodding as she sat, smiling with relief at the warm welcome.
"I heard about your work on microbes and water ice. Promising stuff," Commander Durante said, taking his seat again while he turned towards Olivia.
"My colleagues back on Earth think they might have a breakthrough in that area soon."
"So you're now moving on from water ice to dust. You really think there might be something out there?" he asked, his hands raised, fingers forming a triangle. His index fingers rose to meet his upper lip.
"I'm not sure what I'll find, if anything, Commander, but I guarantee you I won't give up until I've exhausted all of my options."
"Well, you've got 3 years here to try every trick you can think of," Durante turned from Olivia to Jim, who sat furthest to the left. "Jim, you'll be taking over for me next year once my mission is over. I'm not sure what I think about a Space Force man taking over from a sailor like me, but I want to have you here in the command console learning the ropes of running this base. Captain Koronin will shadow my security chief, Lieutenant Barra, until his tour out here is up in a year."
"Understood," Annalie replied.
"I think I can do this job," Jim looked around Durante's office, "about as well as any Navy man can."
Durante laughed.
"Yeah. Now, as for our engineer, Ms. McGonagall, your mission is likely going to be shorter than anyone else's from Opportunity 3. You're here to repair the Odyssey rover, get it back up and running, perhaps even improve its efficiency, and that's it.
Any suggestions you have for the improvement of this space would also be welcome. Just say the word. You're the first rover engineer we've had up here, which is honestly surprising.
I'm honored, Commander, to be here and ready to work,
Joe said, beaming with excitement.
Have you worked in a spacesuit before? Durante asked.
I ran some drills back at JPL and at Johnson when we did our orientation, Joe replied.
Olivia remembered the orientation. Joe did a fair job maneuvering in her bulky spacesuit, though she still found it difficult to lay down on her back and crawl under the rover safely without someone standing there to help her down, let alone get back up again afterwards.
But it'll be different here with the Martian gravity, she continued confidently. So I want to run a few more drills before I get to work to make sure I can fix the rover with minimal assistance.
Good on you, Durante smiled. But remember, no one goes beyond the base's walls alone. We don't need any one person going missing out there without any trace of where they've gone. Their footprints could well disappear with that wind, as Dr. Stevens here knows all too well. So even if you alone fix Odyssey, you'll have another engineer there with you to help.
Okay, Joe replied, feeling somewhat bruised. But I need to review the person who's going out with me, see if they can do the job.
You have a week to review the other engineer's records, but you're going out there next Friday. Durante looked at his monitor. The 28th.
Understood, Joe affirmed. I'll be ready.
All right. Well, you have your missions to complete. Good luck. Please don't hesitate to call if you need to. I'll probably see you in the mess.
Durante ended the briefing, rising from his chair with the four sitting on the opposite side of his desk. They turned and filed out the sliding doors into the command console center room again.
Colonel King, the officer who led Olivia into command, approached the four. I'm Lieutenant Commander Quillen, Commander Durante's executive officer. If you'll follow me, I'll take you to your station. Same goes for you, Captain Coronin.
The two followed Quillen as she led them around the command console. Olivia noticed Annalie stopping at a station occupied by a dark-haired man wearing French and European flags on her shoulder, Lieutenant Barra, before Jim found his place at Quillen's station at the center table overseeing the operations of the entire base.
I think that just leaves us, Joe said meekly, standing beside Olivia outside Durante's office door. Have you been to your quarters yet?
No, I went straight to my lab to send a message home.
Come on, I'll show you where we're sleeping,
Joe said, leading Olivia out a door adjacent to the one she entered through. They left command and walked down a corridor that extended at a 45-degree angle from the one that led to the science station.
Crew quarters are located along the northern perimeter of the base. They've got us as neighbors. I think your bunk is below mine.
Sounds good, Olivia replied. I was worried I'd have to get to know an entirely new neighbor after 6 months. Joe laughed.
It's interesting being here now. With all the changes coming to the Mars program and Elysium Base, I hear they're considering offering crew quarters that are proper rooms, not just bunks along the corridor.
Olivia knew about the bunks. It'd be like her time on the moon. If there was anything she really missed while she was up there, it was the privacy of her own room. She had that here, but in her lab rather than in her bunk. But at least she had a place where she could get away from everyone else.
So, with Jim and Annalie staying behind, does this mean that Opportunity 3's mission is over?
After all, it got us here.
Joe looked into Olivia's eyes. I guess so. We can still wear our Opportunity 3 patches on the station, but I'm going back with the Australians in 6 months, so I suppose we're just Elysians now.
Elysians? What a fine field we're in here.
Do you think Achilles would approve? I mean, what better place for a great warrior than on Mars? Joe offered.
It's no Garden of Paradise, that's for sure.
They left the arterial corridor and entered the perimeter corridor, turning right and finding a series of bunks built into the walls of the passage, two levels on each side. The names of the occupants could be found by each bunk. They were ready for us when we got here, Joe said, leading Olivia two-thirds of the way down the corridor to a set of bunks that seemed less lived in than the others. Here we are. Olivia looked at the bottom bunk and saw her name. Olivia Stevens, PhD, CSA, written on a sign next to it. Above it was Joe's bunk, labeled Josephine McGonagall, MS, JPL.
She looked across the corridor for their neighbors and saw two unfamiliar names. Viola Penelope, MD, NASA, in the top bunk, and Rosalind O'Brien, PhD, ESA, in the lower bunk. Out of the top, a voice suddenly called out, "Joe McGonagall, is that you?" Joe and Olivia turned to see a rosy face beaming with joy poking out from the drawn curtains of the bunk. "Viola!" Viola rose from her bunk, still in her pajamas, and the two friends hugged. "Oh, Viola, this is my friend Dr. Olivia Stevens from Toronto. We arrived together this morning on the opportunity." "Dr. Stevens, I've heard so much about you," Viola said, offering her new friend a hug. "Please, call me Olivia," which was the surprised reply. "How do you two know each other?" Joe laughed. "We went to high school together back in Kansas City. I left home for engineering, and Viola stayed home and went to med school." "Oh, what kind of medicine do you practice?" Olivia asked. "Back home, I'm a family physician, but up here I'm the local doctor for every cut, scrape, or depressurization that I get called up for." "Good for you. That's quite the task." Olivia was surprised at Viola's duties. "Thanks. What an opportunity, though, to spend a few years out here on Mars," Viola segued. "I hear you're out here looking at that dust storm. Something about broken down fossilized carbon fragments?" "That's the theory. If I follow the dust storm back to its source, I'll be able to find where the carbon came from, and possibly then evidence of what it came from, too." "Or who?" Viola added, letting that awkward silence spread between the three of them standing there in the corridor. "I can't guarantee anything," Olivia replied cautiously. She didn't want to get her hopes up, let alone anyone else's hopes up either. "Well, I'm excited no matter what you and your team find," Viola replied, turning to look back at her bunk. "I'm needed in sickbay in 30 minutes, though I thought I'd get a nap in after lunch. It's good to see you again, Joe. I want to hear everything you have about home. Good to meet you, Olivia. Let's talk some more." Viola turned, drew a pair of boots out of the top shelf that pulled from beneath her bunk, pulled them up over her feet, and made her way along the corridor, away from where Olivia and Joe had come towards sickbay. "She's nice," Olivia said, smiling at Joe. "One of my best friends back home," Joe replied. "I love what I do, but it's people like Viola who I miss the most moving away to California." "Well, you've got 6 months to catch up with her." Joe pushed herself up into her bunk. Its sterile features needed a bit of work to feel like home to her, which meant logging into the bunk's monitor and pulling up Odyssey's designs. "She never stops working," Olivia thought, though that reminded her she needed to meet the rest of the science team. "Thanks for showing me here, Joe," Olivia began. "I should be getting back to my lab. I need to brief the science team on our mission." Joe waved from her bunk. "See you in the mess for dinner later, 1800. Olivia turned and stared down the curved corridor, past the arterial tube she'd taken to the bunks from command and towards the science section once again. Like Joe, she was there to do a job. And while she didn't want to get anyone's hopes up, she was sure she'd find something out there amid all that dust. Act 4. "So, you want to take a shuttle?" Quillen repeated back what Olivia had requested. "Yes, it'll be the easiest and safest way to follow the dust trail back to its source. It's all the way out in Terra Cimmeria, over 1,000 kilometers away. The shuttles are for security and medical uses only. Your science team will need to follow it on land with a buggy." Quillen's air of authority sounded the end of the discussion.
"Who do you want on this team again?" Durante asked.
"Dr. Penelope, Captain Coronin, and Joe McGonagall."
"A proper ride of the Valkyries."
Jim used the same joke he had made countless times on board the Opportunity. "Why those three?" Quillen asked, clearly bemused at Olivia's entire mission. "Dr. Penelope is familiar with the DNA sequences of carbon-based life. I want her to test any samples we collect with her tablet. Captain Coronin will be able to protect us should we encounter any trouble. And McGonagall is the best engineer we have here. Her mission is done. The Odyssey rover is not only back up and running, but it's operating at 150% of its efficiency standards set when it left Earth. She'll be helpful in this buggy if we need to improvise a way to get back.
Good. You can have all three, if they agree to come along. Dr. Reed will take over for Dr. Penelope in her absence.
Thank you, Commander.
Get your team back in one piece. And if you have to camp out there overnight, be sure to radio back where you are and how far you think you are from the source of that dust storm.
Understood, sir.
Good. Then go get your team ready.
Olivia left Durante's office with a sprain in her step. Instead of making her usual beeline out of the command console towards the science section, she went around the bend to where Annalise stood at her station.
Captain, could I have a moment? She asked.
What do you need, Doctor?
I'm looking for a security officer to come with me on my wild dust chase. Care to come along?
Annalise smiled and, leaning in, muttered,
Sounds like more fun than standing around this console all day.
Glad to hear it. Meet me at my lab at 1900 tonight.
Olivia left command through the tube that led to the bunks, walking past all the rows as she'd done for the last month, to where Joe and Viola sat together on their opposite bunks. Viola's legs dangling so her heels rested against the top of Dr. O'Brien's bunk while Joe sat cross-legged.
So, Viola asked, are we going?
Yes, and Annalie is coming along.
In a shuttle?
Joe asked, nigh begging.
No, in a buggy. Lieutenant Commander Quillen wouldn't part with one of the shuttles for scientific purposes.
Even if those scientific purposes could be the discovery of past life on Mars?
Even then. They're for medical and security purposes only.
Hang on a minute, Viola said. She went to her monitor and called Durante. The commander's face soon appeared in the screen.
How can I help you, Doctor?
Nick, are you serious about us not using a shuttle?
That's Lieutenant Commander Quillen's decision.
And not only does Lieutenant Commander Quillen report to you, but I say this is a good medical use of a shuttle.
Explain.
It's preventative medicine. Should one of us be injured or worse out there, we'll have our pressurized shuttle to retreat to, and it'll be far quicker for us to return to the base in any case.
Good point, Doctor. All right, tell Dr. Stevens you can have your shuttle. Take the Peregrine. You leave at 0700 tomorrow.
Thanks, Nick. I owe you one.
And don't you forget it, he winked, ending the communication.
Viola turned from the monitor in Olivia's science lab toward her colleagues.
All right. Let's go see what's out there.
Lead the way, Viola. You know this place better than I do, Olivia replied, making her way to the door, which slid open to let the four out into the corridor and onto their expedition. They walked in the opposite direction from their bunks toward the southern side of Elysium's rounded outer corridors, where the shuttle bays had been built. Pieces of Elysium had been constructed with 3D printers, a more efficient method of construction than had been theorized as possible decades before, but only really proven practical on Mars. After passing 115 degrees around the outer ring, they arrived at Shuttle Bay 1, where the Peregrine sat waiting. It had been on standby. One of the regulations of the Elysium Treaty that governed the operations of the base stipulated that at least one shuttlecraft needed to be ready to launch at any moment in case of accident or emergency.
Can I help you? The officer in charge of the shuttle bay asked, approaching the crew as they entered the sliding doors.
We are here to take the Peregrine out on a mission, per Commander Durante's orders, Viola announced.
There are no launches scheduled, the officer said, looking at his tablet to confirm.
The commander just issued the orders a few minutes ago. Perhaps you should check with him, Annalie added, encouragingly yet forcefully. The officer turned back to his monitor and called the command console. He stood there, waiting for a few moments before Commander Durante's face appeared on the screen.
How can I help you, Lieutenant Zolman? The commander asked.
I have Captain Coronin, Doctors Penelope and Stevens, and Ms. McGonagall here saying they have orders to take the Peregrine out on a mission. There's nothing on the schedule, sir.
That's right, Lieutenant. I just added it to the schedule. Last-minute change of mission plan. Is the Peregrine ready for launch?
Yes, sir. It's on standby now.
Good. Then tell the crew that they are cleared to board and launch, Durante commanded.
Understood, sir, Zolman said as the transmission ended. He turned to the crew, waiting expectantly.
Well, it seems you are cleared for launch. Have a safe flight. Thank you, Lieutenant, Olivia said, as Annalie led Joe and Viola aboard. Olivia followed, taking one last look around the shuttle bay. Find your seats and strap in. This could be a bumpy ride, Annalie said, taking the helm. Olivia saw Joe and Viola were already seated and buckled, ready to go in the parallel seats that ran along the sides of the Peregrine, facing each other. Olivia took a seat next to Joe, facing Viola. All ready to go whenever you are, Annalie, she shouted up to the helm. Understood, came the reply before Annalie activated the radio. Shuttle Bay 1, this is the Peregrine. We are ready for launch.
Opening the bay doors,
came Zulman's voice over the radio. A klaxon sounded in the shuttle bay as it depressurized with the opening of the overhead shuttle bay doors. This was one of the first such shuttle bay launches built for vertical takeoff and landing, and likely the way things would go in the future. Annalie slowly began to lift the Peregrine off the bay floor and let it rise out into the Martian air, where the wind sounded on the bulkheads surrounding the crew. She then engaged the forward engines and set off, looping around Elysium Base once to head in a southwesterly direction, where Olivia checked her own data, which was providing coordinate information to the helm directly for navigation controls. They flew further from Elysium than they could have gone in a day by buggy, following the ghostly trail of a dust storm that blew across Elysium Planitia a full Earth year ago. After 2 hours of flight, Olivia noticed changes in the chemical signatures the Peregrine sensors were reading. I think we found it, she said, waking up Viola, who had dozed off, and rousing Joe from her own study of the shuttle's schematics. Carbon traces in the rocks ahead, 550 kilometers further to the south. Do you see that on your readings, Annalie? The Finn looked down at the monitor built into the helm's controls. I see it, Doctor. That looks promising. I'll begin descent now. We can get a closer look. Olivia felt the shuttle begin to turn its nose downward, toward the red hue of the Martian surface again. Flying over it at 5,000 feet, just high enough to get a good view of the surface, yet low enough to be able to track the chemical traces with her sensors, Olivia was reminded of her childhood flights in her cousin's propeller plane over the Golden Horseshoe and as far north as Lake Simcoe. There, unlike the higher altitudes flown by commercial jets, there was far more influence from the weather to be felt. How close can you land to the traces? Olivia asked. I can get us right on top of them, if you'd like, Annalie said, aligning the craft downward as she spoke. 100 meters will do nicely, Olivia said. Once we land, everyone needs to suit up. EV suits out there, got it? Understood, Viola replied. Can do, was Joe's answer.
Yes, said Annalie.
Good. Annalie, what's our ETA? Olivia felt the craft gently touch down on the ground. Now, came the reply. Olivia looked around. Viola was quieting a subtle laugh. All right, let's suit up, Olivia commanded. The four of them moved quickly to the lockers in the back of the shuttle and donned their extravehicular suits that would protect them from any solar radiation and the lack of oxygen outside. Sealing their helmets, which activated the internal oxygen flow, and after 10 minutes, they were descending the ramp from the shuttle and walked out under the Martian sunshine. It was colder than Olivia expected, colder than it looked. Still, she didn't waste long, but began walking forward, southeast, following the traces in the sand as her scanner kept beeping louder and with ever more frequency, until at last it transformed into a steady pitch. Olivia looked down as best she could in her suit, which had a big collar keeping many of her life support systems functioning. There were impressions in the rock at her feet. She held her tablet up to them and had the sensors read the carbon molecules in the rock. Carbon, she whispered. All the evidence points to it being the remains of a fossilized carbon-based life form, Olivia shouted, exasperated at what had now become a 2-hour debriefing upon her return.
You don't need to raise your voice with us, Dr. Stevens, Durante said coolly.
Jim and Lieutenant Commander Quillen sat on either side of the base commander as he questioned the returning science team leader. She looked at Jim, the one of these three she'd known the longest. for some sign of compassion, but he seemed shocked into silence by what she'd said she'd found in the rocks near the origin of the dust storm. Evidence of past Martian life. Any claims like this needs verification. You can't just go telling people outside of this base what you found out there without peer review, Quillen chided sternly. And yet, that's exactly what you did as soon as the Peregrine returned. Do you realize what headlines are running rampant back on Earth right now? Little green men found in Martian dust. It's the last thing we need. Commander, Durante said, quieting his executive officer. She's right, Doctor. You should have waited to have a second expert confirm your findings before sending any transmission home about them. Olivia was incensed. But how am I going to keep funding my mission up here? How am I going to convince the Allied Space Agencies to send another astrobiologist out here if I'm not able to tell them what I've found? All I did was send a message back to my lab in Toronto telling them I'd made progress. You shouldn't have said anything. Quillen's words were icy cold. Olivia felt betrayed. Only a few hours had passed since Durante had gladly granted them access to the Peregrine, rather than follow Quillen's suggestion that they take a buggy all the way out there. It had likely saved their lives when they went further out by air than they could have returned by land before nightfall. She turned to Jim. Colonel, Jim, what do you think? Jim raised his eyes towards Olivia, and she saw tears in them. I'm sorry, Olivia, but this time they're right. You should have waited. So, what does that mean for my mission? For Elysium Base? It means hearings back on Earth. Congressional hearings in Washington. Parliamentary investigations in Brussels, London, Ottawa, Canberra, and Tokyo. It means the next time Elysium's budget needs to be renewed by each national government, that some will see us as nothing more than alien hunters looking for the next tabloid story. Quillen shot back. And what if my claims are proven true?
Then they will be explained in the best possible way for the most people to understand the facts of the matter back on Earth. We want to avoid the discredit you could face for making wild, unproven claims. Would you agree with a paper published in your field, yet in a non-peer-reviewed journal? Durante asked. Olivia's cheeks burnt red in embarrassment.
No. I would do my best to confirm the results.
And that's all we ask of you, Dr. Stevens, Durante sighed.
I understand, but trust me, I only sent the message to fellow professionals who have the discretion that you expect. They wouldn't leak it. They just wouldn't. Quillen took a tablet from Durante's desk and handed it over to Olivia. Not a word was spoken, yet the screen said it all. It was a social media thread, from an account that looked like it came from someone who worked at the university where Olivia's team was based.
Evidence found of extinct Martians in fossil record! I've seen it fresh from Mars! $10 million, and I'll let the media publish these pictures!
Do you know who that is? Durante asked. Olivia scrolled up to the top of the social media feed and saw the username, Toronto Alien Hunter. She recognized it immediately, knew who it was, and how single-minded the poster was about finding proof that aliens had once existed.
Yes. Yes, I do. And so does my team back in Toronto. Let me talk to them. She headed off another protest from Quillen. With your supervision, if you'd prefer. And in the meantime, maybe I can have Dr. O'Brien run a preliminary analysis of the carbon samples we brought back. She's a chemist, and sure, astrobiology isn't her specialty, but she will be able to compare these carbon traces to ones found in the terrestrial fossils.
That'll work, Jim said. I think it's a fair option, Commanders. All right, but after this one transmission to your people in Toronto, I need complete radio silence from you until we have proof either way. Understood? Durante commanded.
Yes, Commander. Olivia set up the connection back to Earth there in Durante's office with the base commander, Quillen, and Jim looking from off-camera.
Hi, Andy. There's been a situation involving the Toronto alien hunter. You know who I mean. He saw my last message telling you that I'd found possible evidence of past Martian life forms in some carbon traces at the source of the dust storm out here,
and he started posting about it on social media. I need you to talk to him. Get him to take those posts down. Find a way to get him out on our side this time, okay? It's imperative that we get this fixed before the message spreads too widely beyond his conspiracy circles. She looked over at Durante. In order to manage the messaging, I need to focus on confirming my results with some other scientists out here. Do what you can to double-check my claim based off of the last message I sent, whether it makes sense. I'm pretty sure of it, but for something this important, I want to be more than just pretty sure. I'll be in touch soon, I hope. She ended the recording and sent it out. The 16-minute journey it would take back to Earth meant that there was still 16 minutes of more possible damage from the post, any replies to it, or any other posts one of her more confrontational students will have made since then. So, this Andy knows who the Toronto alien hunter is? Jim asked.
Yes.
And you won't tell us who he is because? Quillen questioned. Frankly, Commander, because he's a young man who has a lot of wild ideas about the universe, but he's brilliant and has a lot of potential. If possible, I want him to realize what trouble he's in without provoking him into thinking anyone's after him and making things even worse.
Durante nodded. Your compassion is laudable, Doctor. But if he doesn't back down, we and our superiors will need to know who he is. In the meantime, if we need to, we can request that your government, or the site he posted these claims on, shuts down his access to his accounts.
I don't want to censor him, no matter how outlandish the things he's saying may be, Olivia protested.
So, who do you think it might be? How sure are you about your findings? Jim asked.
I saw what I saw. There were traces of fossils out there.
At the end of the rainbow?
Durante asked, a slight smile coming to his lips.
You could say that, Olivia shot a brisk laugh.
Ghosts in the wind, Jim said, staring off into the distance. What's that, Colonel? Durante asked.
That's what Olivia found, the remnants of life, long gone life. And she was brought there by the dust that was blown off of them.
Fossils worn down by centuries of strong winds that blew particles away so far that in her lab on Earth, Olivia and her team took notice, like a message sent from well beyond.
Were they floral or faunal? Durante asked.
It's too soon to tell. I need to examine the photos I took more closely in my lab first, Olivia said, her hands fidgeting with impatience.
I think we've kept the good doctor long enough, eh, Colonel? Durante asked.
No harm was intended. No foul should be awarded.
Commander, what do you think?
Quillen looked sternly straight into Olivia's eyes. If you're wrong, then I want you to go back out there and double-check the fossils themselves. Bring them back, even. If you're right, however, then everything will have changed. Everything back to Genesis. So you damn well better be sure before you even so much as say anything to anyone not assigned to your team. In that case, then, do you mind reassigning Dr. O'Brien to my team? Olivia asked Durante and Quillen.
Yes, she'll work with you until you have a verifiable result, but we need her working on her own mission as well as soon as you're able to let her go.
Understood, Olivia said. She wanted to get up and leave Durante's office, but after the lecture she had just had from the base commander and in particular from his second in command, she didn't feel like she could budge and risk any further ire.
Durante recognized this, offering a curt dismissed, to which Olivia rose, turned, and walked straight out of command and down the tube that led to the science section.
When she opened the door to her lab, she found four people waiting in there, images strewn across the monitor in the top of the central table. She felt like crying, but instead strode in and said to every last one of them at once, Annalie, Joe, Viola, and her bunk neighbor, Dr. Rosalind O'Brien.
Okay, let's get to work.
I've tested the samples further, Viola began, walking to the table at the center of the lab, and they are conclusively carbon traces that we found.
So, it's the right material, Olivia replied. How can we improve the efficiency of our microscope?
Well, what we've got here in Elysium is the best you'll find anywhere, Joe said. Sorry to disappoint, she added, seeing the surprise in the three faces facing her. We could take a shuttle back out there and spend more time at the source, Annalee suggested. Commander Durante will be more readily able to justify letting us take a shuttle this time with the reputation of the whole Elysium program in the balance here. What do you think? Olivia asked Viola. The doctor thought about it. I think Durante is less opposed to any of this than Quillen is. She's the one we have to really look out for. Okay, it's 21:30 now. Let's call Durante again. See if we can get permission to take the Peregrine out in the morning, Olivia said, walking to her desk where she activated the monitor and began a call to Durante's office. The screen was soon filled by the commander's image. He clearly had just returned to his desk on his way out the door to take this call.
Any progress, Doctor? He asked wearily.
Commander, we've done all we can with the few samples we were able to retrieve today. We have the coordinates of the source, with your permission, we can take the Peregrine back out there in the morning at sunrise to collect better samples.
Be ready to go at 0700. Good night, Doctor.
The transmission ended as quickly as it had began.
This had better work, Joe said, looking at the group.
I have a feeling it will, Olivia replied, turning to her team. All right, we have 9.5 hours until we leave, so Annalee and Joe, I want you to go out there in the shuttle bay working on improving the Peregrine sensors and seeing what you can do to increase the range and scope of any equipment we can take out there on the ground with us.
Understood, Annalee replied.
Can do, Joe responded.
Be sure to give yourselves time to sleep, okay? Annalee, you'll have the helm, so I need you alert tomorrow. Return to quarters no later than 23:30. Understood?
Yes, Doctor.
Good, she said, watching the officer and the engineer leave the lab. Olivia turned to Viola and Rosalind.
Now, can you stay here with me for a few hours? I want to work out what it is we'll do once we get to the source.
Sure. Are you thinking of collecting more chemical traces? Viola asked.
I think we need to collect whatever we can, even whole rocks if needs be.
I'm not foremost a geologist, more a chemist, Rosalind began. But I'll do what I can out there.
Are you thinking we'll be bringing back fossils?
I don't know how to describe what we'll find out there, Olivia pondered aloud. She looked in Rosalind's eye.
Honestly, this is a new frontier in science.
The Wednesday blog is written, read, and produced by me, Sean Kane, and I also came up with the theme music. You can learn more about my work by going to linktree.com/sthosdkane. That's linktr.ee/sthosdkane. There you'll learn more about my website and my blog. Thanks! Thanks as always to my regular listeners, including monthly supporters Elizabeth Duke, John Lundy, and Alex Brisson. You can learn more about how to support this podcast by going to patreon.com/sthosdkane. I appreciate their support. Join me next week for part 3, the final episode of this 3-part season finale, when Olivia and her team return to the source looking for Martian fossils. This podcast is distributed by Spotify. Learn more at podcasters.spotify.com.